KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Akutan, Alaska.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The issue of missing and murdered Indigenous people continues to be of national concern among tribes. Now, tribes are hoping new measures will get bipartisan support in Congress to help tribal law enforcement solve these cases. The bills also coincide with the first ever Missing in Nevada Day this weekend. The Mountain West News Bureau's Yvette Fernandez has the details.
One bill is called Badges, Bridging Agency Data Gaps and Ensuring Safety. The other is called Invest to Protect. Both would fund tribal law enforcement to combat violence and, in particular, address the missing and murdered Indigenous people crisis. Tribal chairman of the Las Vegas Paiute tribe, Benny So, says these funds would give them access to forensic resources and enhance data sharing among tribal and non-tribal law enforcement. He says it will impact their ability to solve these crimes.
A lot of our brothers and sisters go missing to no avail with no help or no resources. And it seems like a lot of those cases get swept under the rug, and it's troubling to hear, you know, all of these cases that go unheard or unanswered.
According to the National Crime Information Center, murder is the third leading cause of death for Indigenous women and is 10 times higher than all other ethnicities. Both measures passed the U.S. Senate last year, but will have to be reintroduced with the current Congress. I'm Yvette Fernandez.
A nearly 1,000-year-old cache linked to the Dene people was found near Cook Inlet this summer. Researchers say it's the oldest such find in the Anchorage Bowl. KMBA's Alaska Desk reporter Alona Nyden has more.
Archaeologists discovered a cellar lined with birch bark in June at a known Dene site at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson. They estimate that the cache was about 3.5 feet across and was likely used for storing food. Aaron Leggett is the president of the native village of Eklutna, located roughly 20 miles north of the discovery. He says it's another testament that the Dene people have been the stewards of the lands in south-central Alaska for at least a millennia.
It's further confirmation of Dene oral tradition. It also shows that there's still a lot more work to be done on Dene archaeology, especially in Upper Cook Inlet.
J-Bear archaeologist Liz Ortiz was among those who first encountered the cache. Ortiz says that she and her colleague expected it to be a couple hundred years old. Instead, tests showed something extraordinary for South Central Alaska, a relatively densely populated region where ground conditions are less stable compared to other parts of the state.
When we got the results back that said it was 960 years plus or minus 30, we were shocked. I mean, Morgan and I were jumping up and down in our cube and tears. It was very, very exciting.
Another J-Bear archaeologist, Morgan Grover, says that discoveries like these are important to discuss.
Anchorage is a new town. You know, 1914 is when it's first established, but there are people who were here much longer than that.
Researchers collaborated with elders and knowledge holders from the Dena and Atna tribes to get more context about the place. Today, half of Alaska's population lives within the Dene homelands, and Leggett says careful analysis of the remaining sites in consultation with the tribes is crucial.
We know we can't stop development, but can we use these opportunities to kind of fill in the picture?
Archaeologists plan to further evaluate the soil samples in and around the cache. Together with tribal leaders, they hope to go back to the site later this year. In Anchorage, I'm Alona Nyden.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
DT Track, your healthcare partner, provides access to a nationwide network of qualified healthcare temporary staff, including medical billing professionals that optimize your revenue cycles. More at dt-track.com who support this show. Educators, ready to transform Indigenous education? The NISN School Design Fellowship is accepting community letters of interest through January 31st at nacainspiredschoolsnetwork.org who support this show.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
We have a moral imperative to design systems, allocate resources, and come up with policy that's going to change this narrative for the state of Alaska.
Governor Dunleavy's wide-ranging education bill sets the stage for a clash with legislators over school funding. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, January 31st. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Ketchikan considers school consolidations to make up for a looming budget deficit.
What happens is it puts our students in the middle of this, year in and year out.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
How does Alaska's land fund community services for Alaskans with behavioral health conditions and developmental disabilities? Through the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. The Trust Land Office manages 1 million acres of lands to maximize revenue generation, with earnings supporting millions of dollars in trust grant making each year to help improve mental health outcomes for beneficiaries statewide. More at alaskamentalhealthtrust.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust.
The U.S. Senate has so far confirmed 8 of President Trump's cabinet picks, including Interior Secretary Doug Burgum. Burgum now assumes the informal title of Alaska's landlord because a major portion of Alaska's land is under the control of his department. One of Trump's most controversial nominations is Robert F. Kennedy Jr. for Health Secretary. At a hearing on Thursday, Senator Lisa Murkowski pressed Kennedy on his support for the Indian Health Service, an often overshadowed agency within the health department. Kennedy said he plans to elevate the importance of Indigenous health.
I'm going to bring in a Native at the assistant secretary level. I'd like to get him actually designated as a assistant secretary for the first time in American history. Ensure that all of the decisions that we make in our agency are conscious of their impacts on the First Nations.
Kennedy said Alaska is one of his favorite places and that he spent time with Gwich'in people in Arctic Village. He also noted that in the past, he was an editor for the news publication Indian Country Today. Murkowski called Kennedy a health influencer, and she urged him to use his platform to increase public confidence in vaccines. He has for decades cast doubt on their safety. Public health experts say vaccine skepticism is lowering vaccination rates and risks the return of illnesses like polio and measles. Alaska senators have so far voted to confirm all of President Trump's cabinet positions, with one exception. Murkowski voted no on Pete Hegseth for Defense Secretary. He was confirmed with the tie-breaking vote of the vice president. Boosting education funding is a key priority for lawmakers in Juneau this year. Districts have been forced to shed staff and close schools across the state. The predominantly Democratic majorities in the House and Senate are each pushing to increase state funding for public schools. This morning, Republican Governor Mike Dunleavy unveiled his own bill, setting the stage for negotiations with legislative leaders. Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone has this rundown.
Let's start with a problem. Alaska has languished near the bottom of national education rankings for years. In fact, the most recent version of the nation's report card puts the state 49th out of 50 on fourth grade reading performance. Math scores aren't much different. Dunleavy pointed to those scores at a news conference on Friday.
Is it because our kids are incapable? Is it because our teachers can't teach? I reject both of those reasons. It's because the policies that we have before us that we're contemplating are not in place now.
Those policies are outlined in a new bill Dunleavy introduced that would make a variety of changes to the way the state funds public schools. It would boost the funding districts receive for correspondence programs and transportation. It would increase funding for career and technical education programs, and it would create an incentive program rewarding school districts for students who read at grade level or demonstrate improvement.
We have a moral imperative to design systems, allocate resources, and come up with policy that's going to change this narrative for the state of Alaska.
The bill also includes two proposals that lawmakers rejected last year with a couple of tweaks. The bill would create a retention bonus program that would pay teachers up to $15,000 a year, and it would allow the state school board, or new this year, the University of Alaska, or a political subdivision like a city, to directly authorize new charter schools. It's currently up to school districts to review charter school applications, though the state board can hear appeals. The governor's proposal is in sharp contrast with the approach lawmakers are currently considering, and the biggest contrast is what's not in it, namely a boost to the biggest component of the state's funding formula, the base student allocation. Here's Senator Lukey Tobin, an Anchorage Democrat who chairs the Senate Education Committee.
We recognize that our ship is sinking in our public school system, and we need to throw it a lifeline and get them resources to address unchecked inflation. That is not included in this legislation. There's no substantial increase to the base student allocation proposed in this omnibus package.
Parents, teachers, administrators, and business leaders have given hours of testimony to House and Senate education committees in recent days, saying they're struggling to maintain even basic school programs. A large majority have cited funding as the key issue holding them back. Base per student funding has risen just 0.5% since 2017. Sitka Independent Representative Rebecca Himshute introduced a bill with the House's take on the education funding debate early in the legislative session. It would boost state education spending by nearly three times as much as Dunleavy's bill, more than $325 million in its first year, with larger increases in future years. Himshute, who co-chairs the House Education Committee, says she's sympathetic to targeting funding on high-priority needs, but she says the governor's bill falls short.
That's the icing on the cake, and right now we don't have a cake. So when you have 15 years of basically flat funding in the face of 40% inflation, to go targeted and strategic doesn't provide the oxygen the schools need to catch their breath right now.
Himshute and Tobin each say they're hesitant to dismiss elements of the governor's bill outright. They both say they're planning to take a close look at the wide-ranging bill in the coming weeks. House Speaker Bryce Edgman calls the governor's bill a positive first step.
We are going to have a meeting of the minds, I feel, on some of the policy items, some of the other items we may set aside and deal with separately or perhaps later on. But I think there's a willingness to also get schools badly needed funding that they are, from small to mid to large schools right now, really just sort of buckling underneath.
Lawmakers say they're planning to pass an education bill early in the session to allow districts time to write their budgets for next year. Edgman says the House is targeting mid-March. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
A state commission is recommending automatic inflation-driven raises and salary cuts for Alaska's governor, lieutenant governor, members of the state legislature, and top officials at state agencies. The Alaska Beacon reports the recommendation was approved by the three members of the State Officers' Compensation Commission on Wednesday and will become effective after the 2026 state election unless the Alaska legislature and Governor Mike Dunleavy enact a law disapproving the decision. Alaska's governor currently is paid approximately $176,000 per year in salary. The lieutenant governor's salary is approximately $140,000, and the salaries of state commissioners in charge of agencies are approximately $168,000 per year. State legislators receive $84,000 per year in salary. Under Wednesday's vote, each of those figures will be regularly adjusted according to the Anchorage Consumer Price Index, a measure of inflation. Inflation adjustments will allow gradual, small raises instead of the large bump that occurred 2 years ago. Housing shortages and overcrowding affect most of Alaska, and the North Slope is no exception. In particular, the remote region faces additional logistic challenges, but also unique economic opportunities. That was the takeaway from a North Slope Borough Housing Summit held in Anchorage last week. The event highlighted affordable ways for residents to buy or build homes in the Arctic. Jack Franz is the director of the Borough Housing Department. He says homes in the region are falling apart faster than new ones are being built.
You also hear about it when you have, a young adult that wants to stay on the North Slope but has to move down to one of the lower cities just because of lack of housing on the North Slope as well.
Fran says the country's most northern region, which is predominantly Alaska Native, is in a unique situation. The remote geography makes shipping and construction challenging and expensive. But he says residents of the oil-rich region also have interest and resources to purchase houses. He says that more than half of the North Slope homes are owned by residents. The Housing Summit aimed to connect potential home buyers to existing financial opportunities, available contractors, and affordable ways to ship supplies. For example, Fran says summit panelists discussed how residents and entities could form a co-op and order supplies together to cut shipping costs.
When you talk about economies of scale, generally, just more you order, the bigger discount you get.
The borough plans to put together a guide listing banks and contractors who are looking to work with buyers in the region. They also plan to present a report on the summit during Kivyuk, which is a celebratory midwinter festival in mid-February in Utqiagvik. They will also discuss it during future village visits. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Grammy Award-winning musicians tour Southeast Alaska to raise money for Indigenous clan house revitalization.
When I was with them, I'd say, I wish you'd come and play in Sitka. So the fact that they're coming is just a dream come true for me.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska Pacific University offers new and transfer students a wide range of scholarships, grants, and other financial assistance. Apply for admission to be considered automatically for most scholarships, and complete your financial aid application by priority deadlines to receive optimal consideration. Financial aid counselors are available to assist. Learn more at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by Alaska Pacific University.
The Ketchikan School Board on Wednesday night postponed a vote to restructure the district's elementary schools. That came after dozens of community members spoke out against the issue, and some educators said if the decision was going to be made, it needed to happen soon. During a listening session before the meeting, teacher Jillian Thomas said teachers and students would need time to prepare for such a big change.
I don't know that tonight's the best time, but I just really want to stress that because having been a person that found out the end of May that she had to move her entire classroom, it was extremely stressful.
Since early December, the board has been considering restructuring the island's three elementary schools by grade level, making two of them kindergarten through third grade and the other fourth through sixth grade. The plan was developed with on-site school leaders as a way to help cover a budget deficit currently estimated at about $1.6 million. The superintendent has said restructuring would even class sizes and reduce the number of paraprofessionals needed by consolidating students. Parents and educators have spoken out against the plan since it was presented, with many of them concerned about the increased distance young students would be from their schools. Multiple parents have threatened to homeschool their children if the plan goes through. Later in the meeting, as board members were discussing making appeals for more state funding, Superintendent Michael Robbins expressed his frustration with the legislature and governor's approach to schools.
Communities are literally getting ripped apart based upon the lack of funding that exists within this structure. If this is how government is going to operate, we will be in a continuous cycle of distress and anger. And what happens is it puts our students in the middle of this, year in and year out.
After an extended debate, the board voted to postpone the vote on restructuring until their next meeting on February 12th. They also directed staff to return with explanations of why a handful of other cost-saving plans were not being considered. The board president said she would compile that list of alternatives and share it with the superintendent in the coming days. For several years, the U.S. Coast Guard's emergency VHF radio system has experienced outages across Southeast and the Gulf of Alaska. There's been progress fixing the problem, but some mariners' distress calls are still being missed. As KMXT's Davis Hovey reports, another entity is trying to help the communications void.
Mayday, 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 this is the Defender. Defender, over.
That's an example of a distress call sent out from a boat in the Gulf of Alaska via VHF radio last year. But some of these calls are going unheard by the Coast Guard's towers in various areas of the Gulf, and specifically around Kodiak Island. That's mainly due to harsh weather conditions, aging equipment, and remote geographic areas where the communications infrastructure is set up. Since 2018, the Coast Guard has noted widespread VHF outages within its Rescue 21 Alaska system, which includes nearly three dozen sites equipped with radio towers that allow the Coast Guard to monitor and respond to emergency calls from boaters across southeast Alaska, the Gulf, and areas around Kodiak Island. And gaps or recent degradation in the system can lead to potentially fatal incidents on the water.
And until we started installing equipment, we didn't necessarily know what calls were going unreceived or unmonitored.
That's Brian Hinderberger, the Chief Technical Officer for Marine Exchange of Alaska, a non-governmental agency based out of Juneau.
But we quickly started to realize that there were events occurring out there on the water that maybe the Coast Guard was not aware of.
The Marine Exchange of Alaska has been acting as a 24/7 middleman between mariners and the Coast Guard across Alaska's waters for multiple years. The nonprofit is currently working to expand its coverage and add more marine safety sites around the Gulf of Alaska and Southeast.
We started out targeting areas that we already knew the Coast Guard had deficiencies or experienced trouble in, so that we could kind of fill the gaps, so to speak. We aren't trying to replace Rescue 21. We're trying to supplement it and provide some additional redundancy to it.
The Coast Guard gave an updated report to Congress detailing the status of its Rescue 21 Alaska system back in the summer of 2023 after addressing outages at roughly a third of its VHF towers in Southeast from a few years prior. The Coast Guard Commandant at the time committed to upgrading the Rescue 21 Alaska system to reduce its VHF tower outages, and since then the Coast Guard says it has made progress. Lieutenant Jake Carlton is the Chief of Security with Coast Guard District 17, which encompasses all of Alaska's coastline. He told KMXT in a phone call on January 28th that roughly the entire Rescue 21 Alaska network was working as of the end of last year. And while the outages are less common than they were several years ago, there are still some instances where VHF calls are not getting through to the Coast Guard. Some of those gaps overlap with areas where the Marine Exchange maintains its own equipment around Kodiak Island, in places like Elbow Mountain, Pillar Mountain, and McCord Mountain. The organization also helps fill those gaps elsewhere with its own infrastructure, and it collects data from more than 160 marine safety sites, many of which can receive and transmit distress calls across the Alaska coastline. Hindenberger says their equipment is set up at higher elevations and at sea level, too, which makes it easier to maintain, and it prevents prolonged outages.
We don't just strictly install up on mountaintops because we know mountaintops in Alaska are some of the harshest environments to operate and exist in, and it degrades equipment faster this time of the year when the weather is far more harsh than in the summer.
One incident when Marine Exchange heard a distress call that the Coast Guard did not receive via VHF was a search and rescue in Marmot Bay, north of the city of Kodiak, back in November. It ended positively after several attempts to contact the distressed boat, but Hindenberger says the result could have been much worse.
Based on the fact that the Coast Guard went back the next day to locate the vessel and it was no longer present, indicates that it either floated out to sea or sunk is what we're assuming to have happened. And if those three mariners were unable to have been extracted from that event, it very likely would have ended far more tragically.
According to a proposed timeline from the Coast Guard, the agency plans to replace all of its Rescue 21 Alaska base station radios by the end of fiscal year 2026. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Havi.
Three foxes from the coastal community of Hooper Bay have tested positive for rabies. As KYUK's Sage Smiley reports, the regional healthcare provider recommends that everyone in the region vaccinate their pets and learn the signs of rabies in pets and wild animals.
While three foxes from Hooper Bay tested positive for rabies, the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation, or YKHC, says there's no known human exposure to the virus in the community. Rabies, which attacks the nervous system, is always present in low levels in Western Alaska fox populations, but it can sometimes develop into a larger outbreak, which increases the likelihood that it will spread to pets.
Vaccinations are the only way to ensure that the pet is protected against rabies.
Brian Lefferts is the Director of Public Health at the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation.
If not vaccinated and an animal is attacked by a rabid animal, then rabies is 100% fatal.
Leffert says vaccinating pets also lowers the risk of a pet passing rabies to a human.
We're not only protecting our pets in that situation, but you're also protecting the people in your household.
Globally, the main way people get rabies is from a domesticated animal. Rabies is transmitted mostly through bites or scratches from infected animals because the virus that causes the disease resides in the saliva. Rabies can cause seizures, aggression, irritability, foaming at the mouth, paralysis, staggering, or loss of appetite.
So what we usually just say is look for anything unusual and report it.
In 2021, an outbreak of rabies in foxes around Nome prompted the euthanasia of multiple foxes and pet dogs. The three Hooper Bay foxes that tested positive for rabies were sent to the Alaska Department of Fish and Game on January 22nd. YKHC says that after increased fox sightings in Hooper Bay, the Health Corporation hosted a pet vaccination clinic and trained two vaccinators in the community. It's part of a broader region-wide program run through YKHC's Office of Environmental Health that vaccinates hundreds of pets in over a dozen communities each year. And while the rabid foxes were collected from Hooper Bay, YKHC recommends everyone on the YK Delta vaccinate their dogs and cats for rabies and be aware of the signs of the disease.
Just because there's not known rabid fox or anything like that in a community doesn't mean that we don't have rabies present.
If you are bitten by any kind of animal, YKHC recommends immediately washing the wound and visiting your local clinic or hospital. And if you suspect a wild animal has rabies, YKHC says don't shoot it in the head. The brain needs to be in one piece for rabies testing. In Bethel, I'm Sage Smiley.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
GCI. Keeping schools and students connected across the state with a resilient and redundant network. Details at gci.com/education.
The Westmark Fairbanks Hotel and Conference Center, located in downtown Fairbanks with 400 guest rooms and 1,700 square feet of meeting space. Reservations at westmarkhotels.com. Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, proud of its ties to Alaska communities since 1977. Learn more at AlyeskaPipeline.com.
Local sponsors do right by their business and for the community by supporting public media stations. Thank you for considering adding your corporate support. You'll be in good company.
Sunday marks the 100-year anniversary of the end of the legendary serum run from Nenana to Nome. At that time, diphtheria was spreading in the Western Alaska community. Public health authorities dispatched 300,000 units of an antitoxin serum by way of 20 courageous sled dog teams. KNOM's Ben Townsend has more about some mushers reenacting a small segment of the journey that saved Nome.
Wind howls and snow falls sideways across the powder white tundra in Nome. 100 years ago, musher Gunnar Kaysen braved these conditions on the final segment of 1925's Serum Run. The Norwegian was led by his famed husky, Balto. In a few days, Jessica Lemaire, president of Nome Kennel Club, will reenact part of Kaysen's run.
We're really looking at honoring those dogs that, you know, came across in some pretty gnarly weather.
She'll be joined by two other dog teams for that fateful final segment, a 20-mile ride from safety into Nome. It'll be a snowy journey, but nothing like the 21-degree temps Kaysen's dog team went through.
Just the idea of those, like, dogs just, like, marching through that weather and those conditions and the mushers that took them through it. And so to be able to honor those dogs, even in just the small part that we're doing, you know, safety to Nome, is, I think, really neat.
The reenactment is the finale of a week of activities in Nome, including a series of museum talks and a serum run themed trivia night. The trio of mushers plan to make it back to town Sunday afternoon, where they'll hand over a commemorative vial to a hospital employee. Reporting in snowy Nome, I'm Ben Townsend.
Big name performers are making their way to Southeast Alaska for a two-stop musical tour this weekend. Portugal the Man, Yatsine, and Samantha Crane will perform in Juneau on Friday and in Sitka on Saturday. The tour is a fundraiser to support the Point House Revitalization Project, an effort to rebuild a traditional Kiksati clan house in Sitka's historic Indian village. Jarek Hope Lane is the coordinator for the project. He says a concert felt like a natural way to raise funds.
Because I think music can heal people, and that's the theme of this, is, you know, dancing our house together. we really need to celebrate the accomplishment that we have and recognize the work that we have going forward.
Lakota Harden is a Sitka-based community organizer. She toured nationally with Portugal the Man in 2023, leading land acknowledgments at their concerts. She says she's been hoping that the band, which has roots in Alaska, would play a Sitka concert for a long time.
I used to say when I was with them, I'd say, I wish you'd come and play in Sitka. And the manager would be shaking his head like, are you kidding me? The flights alone right. would break them, right? So the fact that they're coming is just a dream come true for me.
The concert will also feature Sitka-based artist Yatsine Nicholas Galanin and the Oklahoma-based Samantha Crane. Hope Lang says he sees these concerts and the Point House Project as part of a cultural revitalization that goes beyond a single clan or culture.
I think what's important to recognize is that this event, although it's Kiksati, this is Point House, this is our business, this is an opportunity for the community at whole to see how they can be part of this movement. This is an invitation to come in and say, we're ready now to move forward and get the support.
You can learn more about the Point House Revitalization Project and listen to the featured musicians at kcaw.org. This week, Juneau is seeing some snow, and that comes after a winter that hasn't gotten nearly as much as usual. KTOO's Yvonne Crumry spoke with morning skiers and snowboarders who have been waiting patiently to hit the slopes.
How is it? Have you gone up?
So good.
So good, huh?
Up at Eagle Crest Ski Area Thursday morning, Holly Harris is glad to squeeze some runs in on a long-awaited heavy snow day.
It's filling in fresh, so you get fresh tracks every run. Wherever you go.
She moved to Juneau from New Zealand in November, and she says she couldn't pass up coming out today, even if just for a bit.
I just took a couple of laps. I meant to go to work now, so.
But she says she'll be back tomorrow. The ski area opened the Ptarmigan Lift Wednesday, which takes skiers and boarders up to the top of several runs, greens, blues, and even some double blacks. Due to a lack of snow so far this winter, Eagle Crest Ski Area has only been able to open one lift until this week, the short Porcupine Chair lift that doesn't extend to the top of the mountain. A recent city meeting outlined some big costs Eagle Crest is facing in the coming years, so selling some lift tickets this week is a welcome change from the beginning of the season. Jeff Garman is a forecaster with the National Weather Service Juneau office. He says January 2025 has gotten about a foot less snow than the average Juneau January, and that's measured at the airport.
And there's some spots like Eagle Crest that, you know, may be significantly more below normal because they've had a lot more rain on the mountain than we've had.
This week's snowfall will help close the gap, he says. Then the weekend is slated to be sunny and cold. It should make for some good views from the slopes. Today, the snowfall means there isn't a lot of visibility on the mountain. But that's not stopping Nelson Merrill.
It is awesome. Everyone should come up and enjoy the snow.
And he's not dwelling too much on the late season opening.
I've lived here my whole life.
Okay, how has this year been compared to other years?
Today is great.
Ptarmigan's first chair is at 9 a.m. daily. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Eric Stone in Juneau, Alona Naden in Anchorage, Michael Finelli in Ketchikan, Davis Hovey in Kodiak, Sage Smiley in Bethel, Hunter Morrison in Soldotna, Meredith Reddick in Sitka, and Yvonne Crumry on the slopes in Juneau. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us, news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Tim Rocky is our producer, and I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by support for public radio comes from the communities we serve. Whether you give as an individual member or through your business, know that your contribution makes possible programming that informs, inspires, and entertains. We thank you for the role you play in your public radio station. Find out how you can include a gift to your public radio station through estate planning. Ask your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.
just stuck inside the gloom. Four more exits to my apartment, but I am tempted to keep the car and drive and leave it all behind. 'Cause I'm in my head. Don't believe me. Don't believe me when I say I've got it down. Everybody's just a stranger. Living it right. Am I living?
Yo, I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really want. Don't tell me what you want.
We got M in the place, who likes it in your face. You got G like MC, who likes it on her. Easy B, who doesn't come for free. She's a real lady. And as for me, how you'll see. Slam your body down and whine, it's all around. Slam your body down and whine, it's all around.
If you wanna be my lover, you gotta get with my friends. Make it last forever. Friendship never ends. If you wanna be my lover, you have got to give. Taking is too easy, but that's the way.
You
wanna be my lover.
You gotta
make it last forever.
Yeah. you go driving around. She'll let you into the parts of her set that'll bring you down. She'll let you in her heart if you got a hammer in a vice. But into the secret garden, don't think twice. You've gone a million miles. How far? That place where you can't remember and you can't forget. She'll lead you down the path. There'll be tenderness in the air. She'll let you come just far enough so you know she's really there. And she'll look at you and smile. And her eyes will say, she's got a secret garden where everything you want, where everything you need will always stay. A million miles away.
My father's eyes.
feel my heart start to overflow. Where do I find the words to say? How do I teach him? What do we play? Bit by bit, I've realized that's when I need them. That's when I need my love.
Tires down a dirt road in Nashville in the summertime in 1996. I was listening to my dad and Johnny Cash doing Chain Gang and talking trash with Savannah and smoking.